Hello and welcome to PHP Alive and Kicking, brought to you by PHP Architect, made a little bit better by our partners at Honey Badger. More about them later. This podcast explores the developments in PHP and what it's like to earn a living as a PHP developer today. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Page, better known as Mike Page Dev, and I'm a developer at PHP Architect. And my co-host is a long-time contributor to the magazine, and now a fellow team member, Chris Miller.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
So we have a special guest today. Chris, would you like to introduce our guest?
Yeah. So today with us, we have Matt Stauffer, CEO over at Titan. Matt, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic. How you doing?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. So, Matt, we always start with the same question. How did you get into PHP?
Yeah, and I love this question. I've never answered this on the internet before, so this is fun. I'm usually the podcast guest, like asking people questions. And so I'm just like, I've talked about myself. What is this? When I was in middle school, so I was born in 84. So when I was in middle school in the mid 90s, my older brother, who's 4 years older than me, got into programming. And we were both kind of like originally programming, just like batch files and stuff on the Windows command line, and just kind of really rudimentary. I don't know why it's escaping my brain. Basic programming. We did a lot of that kind of stuff, but he got into like web programming. And so he learned HTML and PHP, and that was just sort of like what you learned. There wasn't a lot of other options at that point. And he said, hey, let's start, making fun little websites before. Cause prior, all we had done is local stuff. And then we'd also like ran a BBS, and that was all very rudimentary ASCII, just plain text type stuff. And suddenly there was this kind of scripting language that was at a different level than BASIC was at the time. And we could do web stuff. And he's like, yeah, you got to learn Vim. You got to learn SSH. You got to learn PHP. You got to learn HTML. And I was like, oh, I've already learned HTML. There was no CSS or JavaScript at the time, right? I've learned HTML before. I'm good, but I had to learn these other tools. And it was really rudimentary stuff, right? It was just like, about.php has a little include at the top that pulls in common.inc that has your MySQL connection, functions or whatever. And so, yeah, we learned it just enough to make really basic websites, and then discovered in high school that you can get paid to do this. Because there was no CMSs at the time. There was no WordPress or anything like that. So people would pay me to basically come up with a design, create it in HTML, CSS existed at the time, and then build just like a really super rudimentary CMS at times. Or if not, it was like the most fancy thing in the world that we had the header and the footer that you only had to define once, and then it got included across all the pages you're working on, or a contact form that actually sent an email or something like that. Like that was like kind of mind-blowing at the time. And so that was my origin, my PHP origin story.
Awesome. So I'm guessing you might have developed a little bit from there.
We do a little bit more than that at Titan today. Yeah. But I mean, it's still, I feel like the way we learned to be and program back then still influences how I code today. Like when we first started Titan, the first project we got, I was like, hey, there's this brand new thing called responsive web design, and we really should do it. I know it's brand new. There's no book about it, but like, we got to try this thing. And so having been there in the earliest days, a lot of these technologies informs the way we've been, coding up until today, because if you've seen the whole history of the web, you have a different perspective on a new technology or whatever, and that's one of the reasons why I love PHP and Laravel, is because we've been around for so long that with love and respect to the JavaScript community, we're not, changing to a new framework every 6 months. That the longevity of just picking something and sticking with it for a decade really impacts how you write code.
Absolutely. And you're actually a Laravel partner as well, aren't you? So
I am indeed. Or we are, at least.
Yeah. And what sort of change does that bring to developing? How does that work for you?
Yeah, so Laravel Partners, we've been around since the very beginning. I mean, before there was an official Laravel Partners program, we were trying to partner with Laravel, because at that point, Laravel was my buddy Taylor, who still has a day job, we talk about how we're using Laravel, and we talk about what it might look like for him to leave his day job and turn it into a company, So that was partnership at that time, was being Taylor's friend and supporting what he was doing, or hanging out in IRC and trying to make sure that we're all nice to each other. You know, like that was partnership then, writing blog posts, hosting the Laravel podcast. And then when he did officially release the Laravel Partners Program, a lot of it was just sort of like, hey, can you help me make enough money off of this to actually make it my full-time thing? And I'm like, yeah, I want this to be your full-time thing because it benefits all of us, including my friend Taylor, right? Like I want my friend Taylor's life and kids and family to be better. So yeah, I'm going to throw my company's revenue that we're generating off the back of open source code that he wrote for $0. I want that to be kind of kicking back to him. So the partnership program was always originally an opportunity to support my friend Taylor, who also is part of the reason why I have an agency and a consultancy in the first place, in being able to also support his family, you know, in the same way it's enabled me to support my family. At times in the Laravel partnership, there have been kind of ups and downs in terms of the value we get from it. You know, being one of the first three partners is like one of the best things ever. Being one of 40 is a little bit less, you know, the best thing ever. They're working really hard over the last couple of years to make sure it's super valuable for all of us who are Laravel partners. One of the things that's interesting from my experience is that I have a history of not having the reputation to get me somewhere and having to figure out how to make that reputation. I don't have a computer science degree, right? I studied English in school, and I was programming before and after and during I studied English. But I'm trying to say, hey, I'm a programmer. You should hire me as a programmer. But I've never worked at a big, you know, Accenture. I don't have a CS degree. I don't have anything in my credentials to suggest to somebody that I'm the person you should hire to write your code. So how do I do that? So I was like, great, I'm going to write a book with O'Reilly. I'm going to tell you right now, writing a book with a major publisher is not a money-making venture, but it is a reputation venture. Because I grew up with those animal books on my bookshelf, right? Like I grew up with them next to my bedside, rereading them over and over again. And so now I got to write an animal book. So yeah, I don't have that CS degree, but I've got an animal book with my name on it, right? So it's the same thing with the partnership programmer. How do I let somebody know that Titan can do this work? Well, among other things, you know, we're contributing to open source. You know, people would sometimes come to us and they said, I Googled Laravel and Heroku and your blog is the only thing that came up. So I guess you're our people. Or someone would say, I looked at the Laravel Laracon speaker schedule and three of them were Titan employees. So I guess we're calling you. So we're trying to find all these different ways to kind of prove that we know what we're doing. And the Laravel partnership is one of those for us. It's just saying like, hey, we're putting our money where our mouth is. Because there's a lot of people who say they do Laravel, but they also say they do 50 other things, right? Well, you can't support 50 different technology stacks at the level it costs to be a partner. So literally just sometimes just the cost of entry is a way of saying, hey, this is who we are and this is what we do and we're willing to commit to this as our main thing.
Yeah, I think the fact that the partnership now, it started originally with just two or three people in the States, and you've now got partners literally worldwide. There's there's partners in the UK that I know of, there's partners in Europe, all over Europe. I think there's even now official partners in India as well, isn't there?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, which is, it's quite amazing to look back. And as you said, it's literally a bloke that you know that wrote something seriously cool. And now there are hundreds of thousands of people employed because he wrote it.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And he secured a $57 million investment off it. I mean,
that, right. I was just going to say, there's that too. Yeah, and I also, I run the business of Laravel Podcast and maintain buildwithlaravel.com. So I have the opportunity to see how are people using this, not just for their individual job, but also to build businesses. And also as an agency, you know, I have people come to us, whether or not we get them as a client, we still get to have that first initial call. So the number of people I see who are doing incredible things with Laravel and therefore with PHP, because like I love Laravel. I'm also an old school PHP head, right? So I'm happy for PHP to be successful, regardless of where it is really delightful and very oppositional to the general concept that a lot of Silicon Valley has towards PHP that, you know, like, oh, it's from the 90s. And I'm like, no, you wrote it in the 90s and then you moved to Ruby and then you moved to Elixir and that's perfectly fine. But it didn't sit there where it was when you left it in the 90s, right? We all grew. And if you looked at where Ruby was in the 90s, it didn't exist at the time. Where Elixir, you know, like it's just an unfair comparison. So it's fun to be able to see how are people writing PHP today? How are people writing Laravel today? And to see more and more people ask the question of what is the ideal modern tech stack for my startup, for my enterprise, for my healthcare group, for whatever else, for my nonprofit, and to answer for the answer to be Laravel and then therefore PHP is a lot of fun for somebody who's been in that ecosystem for so long.
Yeah, and PHP is, I've said it actually on every episode so far, but it runs 80% of the web, and it doesn't do that by accident. You know, it's a language that covers everything that you could possibly want. If it hasn't got it, somebody will write a package for it eventually.
It's, yeah. And one of the reasons that PHP is able to run so much of the web is obviously WordPress. Like, we know that PHP's 80% dominance is, I don't know, but I would guess it's more than 2/3 WordPress. So we got to give WordPress their kind of their credit for, we couldn't make those claims if WordPress wasn't using it. But to your point, if you need a CRM, there's a PHP CRM. There's probably 7 of them. If you need ERP, there's one of those in PHP. If you need a CMS or a CMMS or any other kind of like baseline tool that is standardized in any way, shape, or form, there's one of those in PHP. And again, with love and respect to a lot of the really wonderful tech stacks that I'm comparing against, like, I freaking love Rails, right? Like, what people in Rails are brilliant. The Laravel community has learned a ton from Rails. You're not going to get an ERP based in Rails that you can just get off the shelf. You're not going to get usually a CMS based in Rails that you can get off the shelf. Like, there's just like, there are people who just use them things for very specific ETL or very specific concurrency things or very specific bespoke custom web application things. And then you got PHP, which can do all of them. We can build bespoke custom web applications. We can build multi-threaded parsers. And then you can also get a little thing that you just downloaded off of, you know, PHP scripts back in the day, or hopefully GitHub in the modern day, that does whatever you need. And then you can tweak it. You can work with it. Like, there's a forum, there's a bulletin board, there's everything you want exists in PHP and PHP server, which I think is why we can say it's not just WordPress that's powering, you know, that 80% number.
Yeah. And yeah, like you said, WordPress is an important part of that, but it's more than just WordPress. It is the whole thing. You have frameworks like CakePHP, Laravel, you've got other things like Drupal, all of which are built around PHP, all of which wouldn't be possible without that language because of how they've been designed. And then it's evolved with the language as well. And how many people look back at PHP 5 code and go, I don't want to write PHP like that. Good, because neither do we. Yep. And it's part of what makes it fun to be watching the evolution of PHP as we go along.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I enjoy about PHP is that, like, you've got things like Drupal in it. And with love and respect, I don't ever want to write Drupal, right? I've done enough Drupal to know I never want to do it again. But Drupal is an incredibly powerful and important tool for building really complex data structures that allow you to have 12 different sites that all take different pieces and components from all different places and have shared modules and shared data sources, but aren't all exactly the same. Like, if I was to work for a university system or, you know, a college system or a hospital system or anything that's just like these massive organizations with tons of data, Drupal is a really great fit that I never want to touch. And there's so many other aspects of PHP where I can say, like, I don't ever want to do that, but I'm so glad that it's out there and it's a possible tool for people to work with. Even when we're talking about bespoke custom web application development, right? That's what we do at Titan. We make custom web applications, custom web APIs for people who need them. There are ways to do that that I don't like. And I never want to write code that way, right? Like, I don't want to do DDD. I don't want to do CQRS. Honestly, with respect, I don't even want to write Symfony. But I'm glad they exist. And that is one of the things I really love about the PHP community, is that I don't have to say, I don't want to write code like that, therefore it's bad and should go away. I'm like, I don't want to write code like that. And so I'm glad there are people who do, because now we can serve a broader perspective, broader set of the world. And we're also benefiting each other, right? I have friends who work at some of the premier Drupal shops, and we share notes. Like, actually, a Drupal developer is the person who first taught me OOP. Like, he was one of my buddies from high school. He got a job in Drupal. Because of Drupal, he learned OOP really well. He sat me down over email, over a couple email threads, and he taught me how OOP worked. And I'm like, this is something that's possible because PHP has been around for so long and serves so many people in a way that I'm just really grateful for.
Yeah, and the OOP aspect of PHP is permanently growing. There's more and more being added each time there's a release that adds more to that power, like the pipe operator coming in PHP 8.5. That is a step towards another form of OOP. And I just love watching PHP evolve. Now, in amongst that, you mentioned that you've had yourself and some of your other employees speak at varying conferences. I think Mike might have a question about one of those.
Yes. So I was at Laravel Live UK last year, and you were speaking, and you did mention something towards a pub fight on the night before the conference.
Yeah. So I love Laravel Live UK. It was one of the first conferences I ever spoke at years and years and years ago, and it was really fun to come back. And my wife was with me, and so we were kind of wandering through London, and we walked over, and when I'm there, I know the names of all the places, but now I don't know. But we walked over to a place that was a close walk. It was an Indian restaurant within close walking distance of the hotel. Mm-hmm. We're walking back, and we see man and woman, couple stumbling and fighting with each other pretty loud. And the man rears back and just clocks the woman in the face, just smacks her harder than I've ever seen anybody, you know, hit a woman, you know, like in that kind of context. So two women are ahead of us. They rush over and they grab her, and he starts kind of like showing like he's going to be violent. So I kind of run over, and we just talk to the woman, and we're kind of ignoring the guy. And we're just like, hey, are you okay? And she's falling over sloppy drunk. Their teenage daughter's with them. And at some point, the guy starts talking trash to me and Eric Barnes, who's with me. And we're like, hey, we're not trying to fight with you. We're just trying to make sure she's okay. And he's like, don't touch her. Don't talk to her. And I'm mainly just kind of making sure that the two women talking to her are safe from this guy, because he's throwing out all sorts of insults against them. And so I'm just trying to make sure they're okay. And I feel like he's kind of like calmed down a little bit. So I turn around and I check in with them to make sure that they're okay. Unbeknownst to me, at that point, he starts threatening me. And because I don't know if it's ADHD or what, because I'm focused on them, I'm not hearing what he's saying. So he starts threatening me, and I'm not hearing it. My wife told me later, she's like, he told you he's going to punch you if you don't get out of his way. I was like, I didn't hear any of that. I just turned around to check in to make sure these women are okay before I figure out, like, should we stay here? Should we keep walking? Is this their family issue? What are we doing? Whatever. And next thing I know, I'm sitting on the ground. Like, that's literally, I'm sitting on the ground and my head's ringing. And so the guy's he's a shorter guy, very, very stocky, probably played some kind of sports at some point, very clearly has fought. He's like a bully, right? Mm-hmm. And so he just, when I'm not even looking at him, he just comes around and just kind of clocks me right in the jaw. And, you know, if you've ever been hit very, very, very hard in the face when you're not ready for it, I wasn't even looking. I didn't have, you know, nothing. So yeah, he pushed me back on my ass. I kind of jumped back up and kind of shook my head. And thankfully, that was enough to get other people who are just sitting back and watching actually be like, oh, this is actually a problem, because they hadn't all seen him hit this woman. So somebody flagged down a cop. Cop comes over. They kind of handle everything. And that was the end of the situation. I actually had like a little bone spur there for a little bit. And I was like, do I have a permanent deformity just because I didn't pay attention to this man who was literally threatening to punch me? My wife gives me so much crap about it, because she's like, he literally said he was going to punch you. Now I don't trust you in a fight. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. I was focused on making sure the person was okay and not listening to the drunk idiot saying, I'm going to punch you. I will take that note for next time and make sure that I pay attention to the violent person. If I'm the 6'2" guy there trying to be making sure everyone's safe, I should probably pay attention, because I'm the first target of it. So anyway, there's more pieces of that story. I think at some point, Eric Barnes kind of saw me get punched and kind of jumped in. I don't know, because I was not fully cognizant at the time, but I think he jumped in and kind of tried to push the guy and make sure it's fine. I don't fully know. All I know is, in the end, the best part of the story, because there was a lot of negative parts of the story, in the end, at some point, I don't remember if it was right then, my wife, like, he was starting to be aggressive. My wife was holding her purse, and she just starts swinging her purse like it's a freaking nunchuck, just going towards him and, like, yelling. And she's like, and the guy actually backed off. And I mean, she's 5'9", so she's not short. She was wearing heels, so she probably looked like she was 6 foot tall. But I was just like, yeah, that's kind of badass, baby. Like, you know, I'm not saying you need to defend me, but that's kind of cool. So anyway, that was my story.
Yeah, that's the first time I've actually heard the story, because after you said that at the conference, I think you got swamped, and I couldn't get a look in at all. I was intending to come over and say hi, but you're pretty busy, so I thought I'd back off and leave.
Yeah,
and I thought I'd never hear that story again, but I'm so glad. Yeah. And
well, thanks for the opportunity to tell it.
That's all right. I mean, all respect for you jumping in to something like that. That takes bravery for a lot of people would have just walked by. So
I don't want to claim it like I'm this wonderful brave person, because it also probably takes a little bit of stupidity, because if you are going to jump and put yourself in a place of potential physical harm, you should probably pay closer attention to the violent person. So I'm going to own right there. I'm not a fighter. I don't know. I don't like have the, hey, violent situation focus. So like, I'm the idiot. I'm the like, Captain, you know, save a person, you know, idiot here, as much as this is anything admirable. So thank you for your kind words, but also, you know, I have learned a lesson as well. So
no, but you're making sure someone was safe. So I completely understand that.
So it sort of sounds a bit like, in the middle of that, you're telling us that your wife's sort of saying that you weren't listening. And is that a common occurrence? Or?
Before I tell you what, I'm going to save Matt from having to answer that question, and let's hear from our sponsors.
Let me tell you a quick story about our sponsor, honeybadger.io. One time, a customer of theirs had a background job run overnight that caused hundreds of thousands of errors to be reported to Honeybadger by mistake. Like many other error tracking and performance monitoring tools, Honeybadger bills for monthly usage, and so this customer's mistake was going to cost them a lot of extra money that month. If you've ever used a monitoring service, you might have experienced something like this. Well, fortunately for this customer, they emailed Honeybadger's support and received the most amazing reply. Honeybadger was resetting their monthly quota and canceling their bill. This is just one example of how much the small team at Honeybadger cares about their users. Ask anyone you know and you'll hear similar stories. Go check them out at honeybadger.io. It's free to get started and setup takes less than 5 minutes. Don't forget to bookmark it. That's www.honeybadger.io.
Thank you, Honeybadger. So, moving on. So, I've obviously listened to a lot of your podcasts, Matt, over the years. I'm the sort of person that when I started, I'm fairly new into the PHP world and development world, only in sort of the last 5 years. And when I knew I was having to learn, I was kind of told I had to learn PHP to do with a job I was in. And one of the things that I tend to do is I then look for things like podcasts and blog posts and things like that to try and soak up as much information as I can, as fast as I can. And you've got the Laravel podcast that you do. And I think there was another one you used to do. Was it a snippets one talking about Titan as well that you used to have?
So many. We had 20% time. We had 5-minute show. Yeah. Laravel, things worth learning. Yeah, I'm one of those prolific podcasters.
Yeah, Phil, you talk a lot about your day to day in all those podcasts, and I've heard you like the way that your job has evolved over the last few years, and you don't get to do a lot of coding, but you do sort of manage teams now, and we're quite interested to see understand what it's like for you to be working and managing with a team that works in the PHP world.
Yeah. I have really strong opinions about what it looks like to organize a team of effective developers. I actually just recorded a course with Laracasts that's going to be free. It's coming out later this year about to build a dev team. So anybody who's interested in this topic, just, you know, follow me on Twitter, follow Laracasts on Twitter, whatever. Go check it out. It'll be free when it comes out. And it's three hours of content. Mm-hmm. Basically from beginning, if you are responsible for building or maintaining a dev team, whether as an agency or at your organization, that's the, you know, kind of here are the things that you should do to run it the way I would run it. And that does not mean, and that's both for this course, but also what I'm about to say, my experiences in managing a development team are in a particular context, a particular size, right? And like I already recognize, like there are 500 and 1,000 and 1,500 person dev teams where they'll watch my Laracast, they won't watch it. But if they were to watch it, they would laugh their heads off because they're like, that doesn't work at our scale. Totally fine. But the majority of people that I interact with are 50 or less. And even if they have 100 or 150 developers, they're set up in teams of usually, you know, 10, 15, 20. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of these same things apply. I strongly prefer a small team of full stack developers working on one feature at a time. I don't like the separated front ends, back ends, whatever. That doesn't mean that we don't have people who are more front end focused and more back end focused. Some people are more React or more Vue or whatever. That's totally a thing. But I want to be able to believe that a team, at whatever the team size is, preferably as small as possible, we're talking 2, 3, 4, 5 people, can, given a feature, be responsible for taking that feature from initial conversation business to deploy without having to rely on anybody else. And yeah, maybe you got IT for deploys, or maybe you got UAT for testing. That's fine. But I'm saying just like actually creating the thing. Because when we get in situations where we've got these distinct teams, not only do deploys get more complicated and testing gets more complicated, but communication gets more complicated and timing gets more complicated. And then you got the issue where the front end team's working on this, the back end team working on that, but then the back end team gets pulled for that. And now the front end team is waiting on that. Like the more systems, the more processes we have, the more complicated it is, the more likely it is we're not going to be able to ship. And one of my spicy takes is that I think the whole agile world is actually toxic and is not beneficial to development process. And it's because, among other things, it introduces friction and work between defining a feature and shipping the feature that doesn't actually need to be there in the first place. So what it's like for me to manage PHP developers is I find people who I trust, who are capable developers, who have a history of showing how to like learn new things, who how to handle difficult situations, who are excellent communicators, who are responsible, empathetic, right? So this is a person who I trust, who I respect, who I enjoy working with, who I think that if I ask you to do the thing, you can get the thing done. And then I give them an environment where they can be healthy and thrive and be happy, which means they're not, you know, operating out of fear or anxiety that they have to perform to a certain level, but they're just able to show up every day and say, like, what's the best work I can possibly do for this client today? And then I just enable them to do that over and over and over again. Minimize meetings, minimize emails, minimize stupid things that are done just so some CTO can feel like their salary is worth it, and maximize taking features from idea to delivery. And so that's kind of, to me, that's what it looks like. So yeah, so I like finding those people. I like building systems that help those people. And then I like constantly looking for new opportunities to make it better. Like, you know, I don't want to bike shed about things, but sometimes we bike shed about a thing so that we don't ever have to bike shed about it again, right? So we're going to sit on this particular thing and say, what's the best way to do this for a week? Or, you know, we do 20% of time on Fridays. So maybe we'll just dedicate a whole Friday to hack out what is the best way to handle this thing. So the next time somebody runs into that problem, they just go look at these notes. So like recently I was working on a project that said, hey, we want to do touch ID and face ID on the web. You know, usually when we're doing those sorts of things, we're only doing them in mobile. So I was like, what does it even look like to do touch ID and face ID? And I found a couple people on the company who'd worked with it before and built a proof of concept app and was constantly like, oh, but I'm stuck on this and this JavaScript's not working, whatever. And then it got to a point where it was good. And I just like lived in face ID and touch ID for a while. And then I said, okay, here's the repo. And if anybody has to do with Face ID and Touch ID again, go over to this repo. Don't reinvent the wheel. Don't try to pick which package you're going to work with. Don't figure out which development. Just go to this thing. And so it's a lot of fun to constantly be evolving the project and the team and the setup so that they are more effective, more efficient, and more able to spend their time on what is uniquely interesting to them and unique to the client versus we're going to rewrite auth for the 17th time across, you know, the last 3 years. But no, auth is auth. Just move on to something interesting, you know?
So question that sort of comes to my mind is when you're managing teams at any scale, people are people and they disagree over stuff. So let's just pretend you have a scenario of two people completely disagreeing over what right looks like. How do you handle that?
Yeah. Well, for starters, if we're talking about from a development perspective, there is a value in that I have that is you should have a kind of like an overarching mentality for what do we use to gauge things against to decide, like, does it or does it not match this particular value that we have? And we do that at the rest of the company. To give an example, you know, as my business partner at the time and I were trying to figure out what insurance policy we were going to give to people, there's two insurance policies that the provider gave us. And one of them gave a benefit, which is optimized for helping people get a better tax benefit for money they're spending on healthcare. And then the other one had a benefit that was more beneficial to people who are in unexpected and difficult situations without a family support. You know, one of the most common ones there was you have a kid and you don't have family support. And so we're like, all right, which are we going to pick? And what we decided was our value is that the people who need help with tax optimization are constantly already thinking about tax optimization. They're already on top of things. They're kind of like, their core needs are met, but their, you know, their top line values are like, how can I squeeze a couple extra dollars out of the government? Whereas this person is pregnant and doesn't have any support around them. And so our value there of like caring for the people who needed the care the most made that decision really easy, right? And we try to do the same thing across the whole company. So as we're thinking about a programming challenge, we say, well, first of all, if there is a right or wrong in this particular programming challenge, do we have a value that allows us to say, well, right or wrong in the world may not exist. Right or wrong in this project hopefully exists, but even if it doesn't, right or wrong according to our pre-established, predefined values as a company should be relatively manageable. So for example, we prioritize keep it simple, stupid, KISS. We prioritize making the simplest possible thing today, because if you want to optimize for the future and we can't predict the future, we need to keep things as simple as possible, write as little code as possible, so that when new requirements come down the road, we have not built this hyper-architected thing that's so rigid because it's like, well, we planned for these futures and then those futures didn't happen and a different future happens, you didn't plan for it. Good luck adapting it to that. But if you have a much smaller, simpler piece of code, it can move much more lively when new requirements actually come. So maybe that might be the type of value that we use to evaluate the pros or cons here. But even with all those things defined, sometimes you just get into a clash where people don't agree on things. And the next most important thing is to have a clear delineation of responsibility. People are very, very excited about the idea of flat architectures of their companies. And it's very nice in theory, But in practice, it's just the same as unlimited vacation. You say it's unlimited vacation, but there become cultural expectations or lack of expectations that make you never sure whether you can actually take vacation or not, right? If you have unlimited vacation, well then, yeah, I'm going to take a 365-day vacation. Wait, you're saying I can't do that? Well, then vacation isn't really unlimited. So what is it? You've said we're being we're giving you this flexibility, and really what you're doing is you're just making it really unclear, which leads to conflict. So the clearer you are about defining how things should happen, the less clarity or the less need for clarification there is in the moment, and the less possibility there is for conflict. You may or may not like my vacation policy, but we're not going to have a fight when you want to take a vacation. You're already going to know what the answer is. So similarly, if there's a fight between two people on the project, almost every time there's going to be a delineation of who on that project is the person who breaks the decision, right? We almost always have a lead and not lead on the project. But even if that's not the case, bring in the director of engineering and he'll make the final decision. And regardless of what you two think, if you bring Keith in, Keith is going to bring in the thing. And Keith can't decide, bring me in and I'll break the decision. Like there's this line of delineation, and we don't have this really highly structured organization, but also we just hit points where I was like, yeah, it's Matt and 10 developers, that's not working. And so I introduced the concept of the senior developer. And then at some point I was like, that's not enough. And so then I split out the senior developer into the lead developer and then director of engineering. And so like, we just kind of like, as we find the natural dynamics of our interactions require a level of this clarification, this kind of delineation, we just build it. And then now that's kind of answered. So I can't imagine today being in a situation where if people, first of all, it basically never happens at Titan because we're just so aligned on things. But if people are to disagree, they'll know that, first of all, the lead basically wins. And if that doesn't solve it, then bring in Keith. And if that doesn't solve it, bring in Matt. And the number of times they had to bring me in on anything since Keith has been a director of engineering has basically been zero.
Yeah, so it's that talk about it, but if you need to, escalate it, which it works. And I don't know whether you've heard any of my talks, but most of my talks basically consist of saying if teams talk to each other, things get solved. And that again is sort of that callback to the PHP culture. It's almost undeniable in PHP developers that PHP developers just love helping each other anyway. Mm-hmm. And I've worked in places where there's been disagreements over the right or wrong way to do something, and I've been absolutely adamant that my way is right. The decision's made somebody else's way, and then I do it the way that they want.
Yeah.
And it's just, hey, I've got an opinion. I will fight for my opinion, and once the decision's made, let's work on it.
Yeah, and PHP has been around long enough, and it has enough people who've been around for a long time, that I will say that while I agree with your statement you just made about the PHP community, it has not always been that way, and it is not that way everywhere in the PHP community. And this is not a unique problem to the PHP world, but we should also not pretend like it's not existent in our community. There are a lot of people in PHP and in other communities who believe that their way is the only way, and that anybody who does it a different way should be disallowed from doing so and shamed for doing so. And as a person in the Laravel world, Laravel has been, you know, thankfully it's not so much today, but in the early days of Laravel, we were the targets of the, you're all doing it wrong, and this is not how it should happen. And even people at the PHP level would try to introduce new things in PHP that almost would disallow or discourage, you know, writing things in a particular way. Like, because for example, with PHP, you can write your PHP more like Java, where it's very heavily architectured. I literally just read some Java Spring Boot code this morning, and you've got DTOs, you've got a separate domain layer, you've got data mapper. And if you hear those things, you're like, oh, there's people who write PHP like that, right? And then there's people who write PHP more like it's Ruby, which is more common in the Laravel world, you know, where it's very, you know, very flexible, very concise, you know. And even within the Laravel world, we've got the people who are much more on the data mapper side and much more on the whatever side. And I would say at our worst, we look at each other and we say, yeah, you can do that, but you shouldn't. You can do that, but that's the wrong way. You can do that, but that's because you're ignorant and you don't understand. And I've seen more applications than you, so I know that it's going to harm you, right? And that can come from any side to any other side. It's not like the architecture people are more likely to do it than others. And at our best, we say what I kind of said earlier, which is, I'm grateful that this tool set allows you to write code all sorts of different ways. I'm not so scared of my reputation that I think, oh no, if other PHP developers write code in a way I think is bad, it's going to make me look bad. I know that I'm writing good code and that's good enough, right? And I do think a lot of it comes from the inferiority complex that comes from PHP being, you know, the the look down upon one for a long time is a lot of people who are in PHP want to ensure that every code that is written, all code that is written in PHP and all people who write PHP code are in line with what they think like the PHP world should look like. And again, this can come from any direction. You can say, I think they should all write code more like Laravel and look more like Laravel developers, or less like Laravel and less like Laravel developers, or any other aspect. But if we say, you know, I feel better about myself if everybody writes PHP the way I want, and then I'm not as embarrassed by PHP, that's not the answer. The answer is, I'm excited that this tool that we use allows so many different people to write so many different types of code, and each of us can see success. We can get a job. We can start an application. We can sell our startup, whatever, using PHP, and it can be written dozens of different ways, and it allows us to do all of them, and we're all part of the same community. Isn't that beautiful? You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that sort of reminds me of an article that you wrote a while back with Steve McDougall, the one where the two of you had very opposing views, and yes, it makes for a very interesting read. That article does of very strong opinions.
Yeah, Steve's a very heavy. Yeah, Steve's a very heavy architecture kind of guy, and it's so funny that we can be such good friends and disagree so much on how you should write code. And so with that article, he wrote a piece of code, and I was like, Steve, that is absolutely opposite to how I'd write it. What do you think if I wrote an article about how I do it, and we can kind of like riff off of each other's stuff? And it was fun, right? And like, we brought Steve in to subcontract on a project recently, and I said, Steve, you're going to subcontract on the project with me, and I need you to write the least Stevie code in this you possibly can. And he's just like, yeah, I get it. And it was fine, right? Like, this is not some, Steve should not have a platform, blah, blah, blah. It's like, Steve is my friend, and Steve is writing functional code for people and providing for his family, and I'm delighted by that, you know?
I think that just shows the flexibility that PHP has.
I agree.
And that people can have different opinions, but we can coexist in the community. For me, being quite new, as I said earlier, I feel very welcomed into the community. I personally have a lot of sort of anxiety, social anxieties and things like that. I've done a few conferences outside of PHP in like previous worlds and previous jobs. But the first time I attended a PHP conference, it happened to be PHP Tech, which I was working on, because I was part of PHP Architect by then, and they flew me out to help work on the conference as staff as well. But the amount of people that just chat to you and just welcome you, doesn't matter what level you're at, what you know, how much you know, and people want to try and help and pull you up. Yeah, lots of people got different ideas of how to do it. And as you say, doesn't mean they're wrong. It's just their opinion. And everyone seems to be able to coexist quite nicely. Now, I know you're saying there's been differences in the past, but I personally, from someone new within the last 5 years, I've not seen any of that. I've just seen everyone just working together to try and bring PHP forward. The whole premise of like this show, there's twofold. Is one was to get me more comfortable talking to other people and talking in public, but the other sort of the main reason was to try and highlight new stuff that's in PHP, how people do earn a living in PHP, and just kind of say that PHP is still here. It's 30 years old and it's getting better every single year. Yeah. And that's kind of what we're trying to show. So that's not just in the actual language, but the community sounds like it's grown and evolved over the years as well and got better. And it's just quite a welcoming family, I'd say, almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love to hear you. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say that is exactly my experience, that the PHP community of all of them that I've been involved in, I've written code in probably 10 different languages professionally at different times, and PHP is the community that welcomed me and taught me a load of things about how to develop. But I can then take that and apply it to other languages and see the same things work in other languages. Only once in the 25 years I've been developing, and only once in that time have I ever experienced the negative side of the PHP community. I know it exists, but there's been other communities I've been in where the first thing I've experienced is like, don't write code that way.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Why not?
Yeah.
Give me the why, and I might be able to do something about it.
I mean, one of the things we talk about often is that with any programming community, it is easy to think that the community comprises of the people who have voices in social media and at conferences and on YouTube. And that is not the case. That is 0.01% of Laravel programmers are on Twitter. 0.00001% of PHP programmers are on Twitter, right? It's just like these spaces do not represent it. And often you get that kind of loud negative minority. And even when I've had issues in the PHP community, it's never been, you know, anything more than a tiny, 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 tiny fraction of a percent of people. They just happen to be loud, right? That was it. You know, someone who has an established position as a leader and they've been doing the same thing for 20 years and they don't want to adjust. They don't want to change something new or whatever. So, and I love that the talk that you guys are having, not just about the community improving, but the code. You know, we often, you know, we get really excited when we see little niceties like, you know, the single line closures was really nice. You mentioned the pipe operator. I'm excited about the pipe operator because I'm an old school PHP person. And while OOP is wonderful, we don't often talk about functional programming very much in the PHP world. The pipe operator gets us further in the functional programming direction. And, you know, if anyone's familiar with Adam Wavin, he's known for certain things like, you know, Tailwind and really, you know, popularizing testing a lot. But Adam brought insight from a lot of other communities. And one of his first projects was refactoring the collections. And collections, I don't know if they're technically considered a functional programming concept. I'm guessing they're not. But the higher order, you know, aspect of them, just like the way we're treating functions, not as like what we did before we had PHP, but rather things that can actually be practical tools today, is really fun way to see that the community's possibilities expand, for us to learn even more from other ways of thinking about code. You know, functional programming is a alive and kicking and thriving section of the programming world. And the more we get tooling like the pipe operator, the more we can also benefit from those. And that doesn't mean everybody needs to incorporate functional programming into every app they write, but it's now another option. It's another way to write code. It's another thing that we have that we can pull in. You know, I just love that.
Yeah. And they're two almost diametrically opposed ways of doing the same thing. PHP can do both. And it's amazing to think that I actually remember writing code back in PHP 3 when, you know, functional was all we had, really. I mean, you barely got the basics at that point of OOP. And I remember writing this code and thinking, this feels like I'm writing basic code, as in basic the language. And then I look at what I'm writing now, and it's like, I couldn't even do that in basic. That just doesn't exist in the basic language. And I find that I can use both interchangeably. Can do both styles interchangeably, dependent on how the app's been built and what we're using.
I'm quite conscious that I know that you're pressed for time, Matt. So I just want a quick mention, else we will we'll probably get in trouble if we don't mention it. Call for Papers is open for PHP Tech next year. I'm trying to share the screen, but it's not working. There we go. I'm still trying to learn how to use Restream. Yeah, cool. Papers are still open. I believe we will. This episode will go out before we close. So please do get your talks in. It's a great conference. I've been twice now because I work for PHP Architects, and it's the feeling you get when you're there. It's sort of, I've said this a few times. I've said it on almost every episode. It's almost like a family feel when we're there. Maybe it's because I'm with my coworkers. It's the only time up until about, what, a month, 2 months ago, I was the only PHP architect employee in the UK. Now we have Chris, so I have someone else to talk to in the mornings. I don't have to wait until my afternoon to talk to someone. So I've got Chris there. But yeah, it's certainly a great feel. There's some sort of family feel at PHP Tech, and I've enjoyed both years I've been there. So do get your talks in if anyone's out there interested. And if it's your first time, as I keep saying, I have put in two talks for this one. I'm hoping they don't get picked because I'm really nervous about doing it, but I've pushed the boat out. If I can do it, anyone else can do it. So yeah.
So that's such a real thing, like submitting to something and then being nervous about it. Like, I'm speaking at a conference in October. I'm helping someone give their first talk at a conference in October, and I'm delivering a video course in November. And I committed to all of them within the last week, which means I have to do all of them over the next 6 weeks. And I was like, what have I done to myself? I've got also have a day job, you know, I've got a family. what did I do? So anyway, I know that feeling. You're like, I submitted, but please don't accept me.
Yeah, it's I'm trying winning this, but I do have quite a big fear of sort of talking in front of people. Like I know a lot of people do, but I'm just trying to put myself out there.
I know exactly what you mean, Mike. I don't like doing it either.
Oh yeah,
how many talks have you given?
He submitted 10. Is it for this next year? I think he's definitely talking next year. But before we do say goodbye, I just wanted to come back, and I know I don't expect you to ever remember this, Matt, but this is probably about 4 years ago. I did reach out to you on Twitter and ask you about your book and whether you were ever going to update it. And at the time you replied to me and said, yeah, it's going to be updated. I'm still waiting for the update.
No, you sent over it after I released edition 3?
I think so, yeah. What was edition 3?
So we updated edition 3. Let me look. We pushed out a new version of edition 3, I think a year ago. Rather than doing a brand new edition, we just basically pushed a whole bunch of updates. So fingers crossed up to date. Right. My guess is it's probably, because new versions of Laravel usually come out in February, it's probably up to date as of that version. And then the good news is when they don't make these huge overarching changes where they completely rewrite auth from scratch, which is what they did in the most recent version prior to that update, I don't have to go back and rewrite 2 chapters. We could just make little updates. So fingers crossed, other than incremental changes, it's pretty up to date. But if I'm wrong on that, man, you know how to get hold of me. Call me on
it. It's probably me, because I've looked at the version number and seen it's still the same, because I haven't actually purchased the book. I was waiting for the next version to come out to buy, to read. So I'll have to.
O'Reilly's rule is you have to rewrite more than, I think, like 15 or 20% of the book to get a new version number. So what we do is we push minor incremental changes, and they're print on demand. So when I push a new change, it's just there. It's in Git. It's literally in Git. It's written in something called ASCII doc, which is very similar to Markdown. It's like the nerdiest thing you can possibly imagine for a book publisher. So,
you say it's a print. Did you ever do a digital copy too? Because I remember you saying once that you were trying to get them to do digital copies, that anyone that's bought the book would always get the new update.
Yeah. So I couldn't get that. You can go, if you go to LaravelUpandRunning.com, it's got links to the Google Store, the Apple Store, and Amazon. And all of them sell an ebook version of it. But it is the very classic ebook version where you get the ebook and then that's it. When I first signed with O'Reilly, they were their own distributor. And there's a lot more options for that kind of creativity. And because of the way the book industry has gone over the years, they've moved much towards, they're just like, just buy it from Amazon. You know, they sent us out an email a couple months back that says, hey, like it or not, we're indexing all of your code in our giant AI LLM, and our users will be able to ask questions and it'll get answered directly out of the LLM, and you might get, you know, half of a cent for that. So the downside, I told you the upsides of working with a traditional publisher. Mm-hmm. The downside of working with a traditional publisher is I don't have any control, right? Mm-hmm. I get my little 15%, you know, cut, which is not enough for the hours that I put into it. And they choose how it's priced. They choose how it's marketed. They choose, you know, if they're going to feed it to an AI. All that is out of my control. So I have a little side project that I've been toying around with for so long that I need to do it or not do it, where I start publishing my own ebooks and even make like a little mini publisher or something. So we'll see. I'll let you guys know if I end up doing that.
Yeah. We'll have to get you back on if you do that. And
absolutely.
We'll pimp it out for you. Brilliant. Okay. Well, I think we should, finish up there, because we need to let Matt go, and we've obviously got our day jobs to go and do as well. We don't sit doing podcasts all day. So thank you very much for giving up your time. It's been great actually managing to speak to you for all these years of actually listening to you all the time.
That's so fun, you guys. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll be able to meet in person at a conference somewhere.
Let's do it.
So you have to give us a shout when you're next over in the UK, or come over to Tech next year.
Yeah,
and I will make sure to keep myself a little better protected next time I'm in London.
Yeah, you need a few Londoners with you.
Exactly.
Flanking.
You got it.
No problem. Well, thank you very much, and thank you everyone for watching, and we will see you in 2 weeks' time.